The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, so are all the students good to go?
Yeah, we'll do the questions first, and then the students will come up some marker.
Okay, with me. Not that I'm aware of.
You can always.
Sorry about that. I only found out about the conflict like 2 minutes ago.
You can always give him like our email addresses too if he has any questions.
Okay. Then tell me.
Adam
Hattenberg. Okay. You're in section one. Oh, right. I was like, okay, because I'm in section one last semester, and I was thinking, how do I not know you? Okay. So, Mr. Hattenberg, nice to meet you. So, come by my office if you want to. I understand about the comments, so you don't feel like you have to stay.
All right.
I'm David Snyder.
Okay.
Just come to my office.
You want.
All right. So let's get started, and those of you who have this comments and maybe you want to go here after we're done, or if you want to go back and forth or sneak out, whatever, that's fine. Here's the plan. Now, obviously I'm biased. Not everybody knows. I'm David Snyder. I teach contracts and commercial law subjects, both U.S. and international, and I'm the director of the business law program. And the point of this session, it's really aimed at 1Ls who are interested in business law and need some guidance in thinking about how to choose courses starting next year. And we typically do two of these each year. We do one in the spring aimed at 1Ls, and we do one typically in the fall aimed at upperclassmen. But I assume everybody in here is a 1L. Is that anybody not a 1L? Okay, so try to keep that in mind. But the main point is there are, roughly speaking, 150 courses in and related to business law, which means that's about 10 times more courses than you could possibly take. And so there's going to be a lot of choice. Sometimes it's going to seem a little overwhelming. And part of what we're trying to do is help you make sense of those choices and take advantage of the, what I think are pretty amazing opportunities here in business law. And so far as I'm concerned, there is nowhere you can do better. So let me do two things. I am going to show you some resources on the web and then give you a couple of things to be thinking about as you're choosing your courses. And then Professor Bennett and Professor Lepp will give you their thoughts. Professor Bennett is the head of our Community and Economic Development Law Clinic, and she can talk more about that. But it's a transactional clinic, and it's not a litigation-oriented clinic. And Professor Lepp teaches tax. And we'll give you more as we go. Then we'll take questions for the professors, and then we're all going to leave. And we've arranged for some successful upperclassmen to be here to give you advice and to say things that maybe we feel like we shouldn't say. And because we're leaving, they'll feel free to say whatever it is they feel like they ought to say. All right, so here's my piece. First, some web resources. So just go to the main site for the law school.
It seems like it shouldn't be so hard.
And if you go to programs, under academic programs, there's a business law program. Click on that. And this gives you a bunch of stuff for the business law program, and if you're interested in business law, I encourage you to look into those things. We list upcoming events, all kinds of good stuff. If you're interested in some of the things that have gone on here generally, you can look at the annual reports and so on. But right now we're talking about curriculum and courses. So we have this incredible curriculum, and we went to a lot of trouble to put it together in a rational way. Nobody could find it. So we put this enormous blue button right here that says view the curriculum that we figured nobody could miss. All right, so click on that. And now you see our curriculum in business law. And you just scroll and it goes on and on. So it's huge. And we've got, I think, we try to keep this up to date. We're not always totally up to date, but we try. And it lists the stuff in and related to business law. And I find the course catalog for WCL utterly unusable. So what we did was we took all the courses in and related to business law and we organized them. We tried to organize them in a way that reflects the way the world outside of law school is organized. So think practice groups within large law firms, think government agencies, that sort of thing. And so let me go back to the top. So we've got, you know, antitrust and general stuff. If you're interested in banking and financial institutions, that's typically one practice area. And we've got a bunch of courses just in that one practice area. You're interested in corporate and securities? Well, that's the next one. Business entities, securities, and finance. That's where you're going to find things like the basic course, business associations, securities regulation, but the advanced courses also. Interested in commercial law. Commercial law, interestingly, not really quite the same thing as corporate and securities, the way law firms tend to be organized. You know, they can be. Some lawyers do both, but there are these sort of different practice areas. I can't go through them all, but what I want you to see is we've tried to break them down in these different ways, and you can begin to see what's here, and a lot of times there's stuff that you might not have even thought about, you might not even know exists. And the point of these rubrics is to say, hey, look, it exists. You've got one with the law clinics and that sort of stuff. You've got different ones that have international real estate. We list the most of the IP courses here, not quite all of them. If you want to do sort of First Amendment in cyberspace, we don't list that. We don't really see that as a business law thing. But intellectual property, very important assets, but very much part of the economy, part of business law, so we try to do some cross-listing there. We try to give you links to the IP program, and you can find that stuff there. Okay, so the first point is there's this, what I at least think is a pretty helpful just listing and organization of practice areas and courses. But as mentioned, it's way, way more than you can do. So you're going to have to think about how you're going to go about that. And one of the things we decided to do was just talk to some different professors and say, actually, I put this out to all business law professors, say, you have advice to give? Write it down and I will put it out there. That's because we couldn't agree on one thing to say. We tried to do something together, but that did not work out. So I said, okay, this is actually good. Because there are different perspectives, and different students have different goals, different orientations, so I'll put it up. You write one, I'll put it up. And I'll do it alphabetically, so you'll notice. I'm not first, or second, or third. I make it last. Professor Bennett here is first, and you want Professor Bennett's take, which is actually not that different from mine, but anyway. We wrote our pieces with sort of different ideas in mind, and you want to get sort of basic advice that you can look at, not have to have all right here. You can just click how to use law school to help you become a lawyer, and that will take you to Professor Bennett's piece. And Professor Epstein, titled, I'm Interested in Business Law, What Courses Should I Take? And so I tried to write it in a very user-friendly sort of way. I try to do what I regard as basic things, like explain different areas of practice within business law. So the difference between being a commercial lawyer and a corporate lawyer. Most people, including a certain number of lawyers, like commercial law, corporate law, are those not the same things? At least in big law firms, they don't tend to be. And you're like, okay, assuming that's even true, what's the difference? And I try to explain that to you. It's not probably a good idea for you to try to decide, okay, I want to be a commercial lawyer, not a corporate lawyer. But the point is, now that you know how there's this sort of organization, this traditional organization out there, you can start looking and seeing, all right, let me try this, let me try that, let me figure out what's going on there, what sounds interesting to me, which way to go about it. And so I try to explain that stuff. It's under the heading, Stuff You Need to Know. And I try to explain that. And then I give you some sequencing information and lists of courses to take and that sort of thing. And I'm not going to try to go through all that here because it would take too long. And it sort of depends on what you're interested in anyway. Some of the basic stuff, like take business associations as soon as possible, that's in there, right? And you want to take BA because that's a prerequisite for securities regulation, which you probably also really want to take, at least if it's conceivable you want to be incorporated in securities. A lot of times people are thinking about the SEC, a really big employer here. You try to get a job at the SEC and you haven't taken securities regulation well, all I have to say is I hope one of your parents is important. So, you know, that's the things you need to begin to know about. So that has been up for a while. The faculty came up with a more interactive way to think about coursework, and that's called Pathways. Have y'all been shown Pathways? Raise your hand if you don't know about Pathways. Okay, so everybody knows about it. There are different ways that you can get there. If you just put it in the search box for WCL, you get there. We have a link right from this curriculum page. And you can go straight to business law. And we then break down a lot of what you saw in the other places and explain different things. So some of this stuff is explained, and then you can think about, all right, well, let me look at commercial law. And then we break it down. And the thing is, in the Pathways format, we have things set up as foundational courses, key electives, and experiential courses. Okay, so those are some of the resources I wanted to show you. The last one is if you go back to the Business Law Program site, over on the left side, if you click on faculty, you'll get all the business law faculty, and you're thinking, okay, well, I went to that session and it was pretty general. I don't know what to do here, but I'm interested in antitrust. All of us are happy to see students. You come to our office, you say, we're interested in your area. We're like, yeah, all right, fresh meat. I mean, yes, that's really good. And we want to talk to you about that stuff. So you're wondering, who teaches antitrust? Well, just go to this page, press Control F. If you haven't discovered Control F, just a really useful thing. Press Control F, type in antitrust, and the two people who teach antitrust are going to come up, right? And or you can just browse around and see, all right, corporate employment. Oh, yeah, I always was interested in that. And you can see what we do, and then make an appointment with us or come to our office hours, and we'll talk to you and give you much more tailored advice. Okay, so that's the end of my online piece. Does anybody have questions about the online piece, or I'm going to shut this down and turn on the lights, because having lights off after people have eaten lunch is not a good idea. All right. Okay, so that's mission one accomplished. Mission two, the way I think about a lot of this stuff is I divide education essentially into two pieces, which is knowledge and skills. And there's often this tendency to think, okay, I need to learn the following things. I need to cover the following areas. And there's more to it than that. Yes, that is true. You need to. Now, some law professors have a very liberal arts view of legal education, and I think that's great. That is not my view. I think there is stuff you need to know, and I think you will be a better lawyer, especially at the beginning, if you know some law, unlike people who went to certain law schools. If you know some law when you start practicing, and relevant law, and I think in today's legal hiring market, that really matters. And so that's great. Be thinking about that. But realize a huge piece of what you need, probably more than half, is not knowledge. It's skills. And you need to figure out how to pick up those skills. And you might start thinking about what those skills are. I'll give you my two cents. The most important skill for lawyers, and the one they use the most, is writing. The more writing you do, the better writer you will be. It's just like all skills. The only way to learn a skill is to do it. Okay? And my standard example, some of you have heard it, you could have the greatest cyclist ever explain to you how to ride a bicycle. Until you get on there, maybe fall off a few times, and eventually, you know, just keep on doing it, you're not going to learn how to do it. You just got to do it. And law school is a time, right? Because it's safe to fall here, right? It's when, like when your parent was, you know, going on behind you, right? And you're going along, and they say, you know, don't let go, don't let go. And it's like, I'm not going to let go, I'm not going to let go. But then they let go, right? And they got to. And it happens here because we got carpet here, right? Now in the real world, it's concrete. Start learning here, and the thing I hear from lawyers the most, what do law students need more of? I hear two things, counting and writing. So that's just one example of a skill. It depends on what you want to do in some situations. You want to be a commercial litigator, that's a piece of business law. Then be sure you take evidence and then start doing some of the trial ad stuff, right? That stuff will matter. But do think about the skills courses, and we have more and more of them. So we have courses in drafting contracts. We have courses in drafting corporate documents, and you will see those on the web. Okay, so that's my piece. And I'll be quiet now.
Ben and Susan.
I will start. Thanks, and I will sit. I think I can be heard in this room. And thanks, Professor Snyder, and thanks to all of you for being here. Safe to fall here. That is a great segue, David. And you know, I didn't ask you to say that, but I think that is a perfect segue to talk about the experiential learning programs in the school. And also, before I begin with that, let me say that Professor Snyder's emphasis on writing, I could not agree more. I think that any venue you can find within the law school, not only with your upper level writing requirement, which of course you do need to complete before you graduate, but any venue in which you can write a piece of a legal paper, research, supervised, having someone who is a professor. I don't want to diss the law reviews in this. I do understand that if you have a law review note that you are writing for the review, you can enter that at your upper level. It does require some kind of faculty supervision. I really would lean on that faculty member to supervise you. Don't be happy when you don't, when you get away with not, you know, with a final draft. You want a writing experience in law school that, first of all, will subject you to the experience of picking a theme, picking a bibliography, going through resources, doing the first draft, doing the second draft, having someone who is a mature writer, an experienced writer, faculty member, review with you in successive stages and then come out with a product. I think there are many other venues in the school for more targeted writing. As Professor Snyder said, you do have classes on pretrial litigation, which you in civil litigation certainly experience in a very closely supervised way what it means to write model pleadings, motions in discovery. That's a specialized kind of writing, extremely valuable, very analytical, very linear. there are other the drafting contract seminar. I think that there are many opportunities, but definitely look at that. Don't see it as something that, oh God, I've got to do this or you get out of here. See it as an opportunity truly, truly to stretch those skills under the supervision of someone who really cares about how accurate and persuasive the writer can be. That's really, really important. And that is a skill we draw on heavily in our clinical program. Let me talk about the two big kinds of experiential learning opportunities that the school offers, and they are two big buckets. One is our externship program, which is enormous. We benefit from our location, we benefit from our ties with many, many NGOs, government agencies, judges, and others in the community who are the sponsors and the supervisors on site of externship classes. And that's one very particular kind of experience. The other kind of experience that we offer tremendous depth and variety is our clinical program. We have 10 clinics in-house at the school, one clinic, which another clinic, D.C. Law Students in Court, which students visit off-site in the courthouse. And they all offer the experience of being able to represent clients in a closely supervised atmosphere with faculty supervisors, working with one or two peer colleagues, fellow students, in the actual representation of clients. And yes, it is true that the clinic that I supervise is the Community Economic Development Law Clinic, and it is the only transactional clinic in the school. I can say a bit about the skill sets and the kinds of clients that you will be exposed to in that clinic, but I think generally, any clinical program in the school, whether it's a one semester or two semester offering, we have both, exposes you to the range of skills that Professor Snyder is talking about, and they're all transferable, whether or not you think you want to be a litigator. I think it's a good thing, though I haven't been a litigator for many, many years, to be in a clinic that requires you to meet with a client who has an issue, needs defense, or affirmative advocacy in a setting that requires a court resolution. And to take that through all the stages necessary, from the very beginning of interviewing the client to reading the pleadings if the client in fact has been sued, to develop pleadings if the client needs to find a forum to sue in, to pick that forum, to develop a case theory, to do the very targeted research that's required in order to figure out how to move your client through that strategy. This is all terribly important. And no matter what kind of practice you go into, if you think you will never step a toe in a courtroom again, I think this is valuable. I think this is valuable just because you're required in any clinical setting to integrate what you learn in your doctrinal courses, all the good folks here, with the problem solving and the application that you need to meet the needs of a particular client. And that is what the majority of lawyers do. Folks who go on to do policy don't do that necessarily. But folks who represent clients, whether it's a broker, commercial, civil or criminal legal services, criminal defense legal services, that's what they do. And odds are really good, that's what they'll do. You get out of here, you work for the government, and you stage federal, local, state, private firm of any size, NGO of some size, you're only going to work with individual clients, and any of the clinics will give that to you. The clinics differ in their subject matter. We have clinics focused, again, on criminal defense, on domestic violence. We have women in law clinic. We have a low-income taxpayer clinic in which students represent clients in controversies before the IRS with their problems primarily from the earned income tax credit. We have the intellectual property clinic. There are a great many. There's a large variety, and they differ in subject matter focus. Some of them have prerequisites. Some of them have co-requisites. I think a key thing, if you think you're interested in having a clinical experience before you graduate, is as you are doing your course selection now, take a look at the clinic website. It's under programs on the main website. You click and this program. Just to see what the clinics require, so you can begin to plan for that as you're going forward. To my knowledge, the externships don't have pre or co-requisites for classroom work, but the clinics do. Ours, for instance, the Community Development Clinic, has business associations or SOS course in nonprofits as a pre or co-requisite. So it's something to take a look at if you think you might be interested in clinical experience and slot in as you move forward. Evidence is very important. for all things that do remediation works. It's pretty hard to learn on the job. It's needed under your belt. So, to sum up on clinics, we have a great many subject matter area clinics who have clients with different kinds of problems that require looking at different venues. The clinic that I teach is focused on community-based organizations that may be small businesses, micro-enterprises, nonprofit organizations, homeowners associations. They're basically small organizations, some of them startups, some of them already established in D.C. and the metro area, that pretty much all have a mission of providing services either in communities that are greatly underserved or serving maybe a slightly wider interest in a particular geographical community. But I'll give you some examples. Our clients include a farmer's market, the only farmer's market in 40, the Anacostia River, which is the most underserved and segregated part of the District of Columbia. We represent a historic Black American Legion post, which dates back to World War I. They're trying to figure out how to conserve their assets, and it's an interesting group. Several home-based daycare providers and child care providers and child care centers. A number of NGOs that deal with immigrants issues, immigrants justice issues. We don't do immigration work, but we do work with societies that are interested in supporting different refugee populations because that's a great need in the city. And a number of nonprofits and NGOs. We do work from them all the way from the very beginning when someone is coming into us to say, hey, we've heard that this becoming a nonprofit, getting a 501c3 thing is a thing. Can you help us with that? And we talk to them and let them know whether we think that's the thing, whether it makes sense, or whether there's maybe some other business group that makes much more sense for them, given their mission and their goals, their personal power, what they want to do. And we represent a lot of those startup clients through the formation of their businesses and right on to their continuation. We're house counsel to a number of organizations, including a number of cooperative organizations and housing cooperative organizations. Some of them are quite complex, some of them are small. Again, the skills that we focus on are writing a tremendous amount of it, research, finding and reviewing counseling, because our clients need a lot of that. Networking, a lot of work with other organizations, both law and non-law, to try to bring resources to our clients. But again, I think you can see similar transferable skills in all the other things we think. That's what we do. The one semester, two semester, up to 7 credits per semester. Check the website for particulars if you haven't done so already. The externship program, we have probably 400 placements. An enormous range of relationships with externship supervisors across the city and the metro area, and also outside in other places. And there the focus is a little bit different. You won't actually do the work of representing the clients yourself, which is what you do. We treat you as the leader and supervisor as the backup and provides oversight, but you are really responsible for the decisions and for executing the decisions. Externships are a little different because you're assigned to an attorney or attorneys or a department, and you, in a good externship placement, you will shadow them to court, through agency hearings in different settings to get a very good idea of what those lawyers do in their particular practice setting. They'll do research work for them, they'll do writing for them, very much like a clerkship in many ways. But it's unlikely that the responsibility for making decisions on behalf of a client will be delegated to you. That's not what they have to look for. Again, it's a tremendously valuable experience. I think it's a great thing to do. You need to go here. It's associated, our externships for credit, with a seminar that meets during the year. You should probably take a look at those if you're thinking about it. But go to our externship website. Ava Sanders is the supervisor. She's the director of the program. And look and see what their range of placements are. And if you're interested in it, start thinking about how to contact a placement so that you can get a sponsorship and find a place there. So that's it. I'm in room 436. You can obviously talk to me on the web pretty easily, and I'm happy to talk to people.
Thank you. I have very little to add to those things, so I'll just be very brief and just say two things that are maybe even more general than the things that were said before. The first one has to do with just conceiving of what it is you're studying and just remembering, and I have trouble with this sometimes. You know, I sometimes think about the various business law topics as things that happen in law firms, and especially sometimes things that happen in large law firms, but things that happen in law firms. But of course, they're also primarily the things that happen in government as well. In other words, all of these topics, there is a government agency that is very relevant to that, and those are also possible employers. So when you're thinking about subject areas, you're also thinking about government or private practice, and you don't need to kind of commit to those. In other words, over the course of a career, often both of those components may be part of a career. So generally kind of thinking about what is the government component of this, and what are my opportunities here in DC to interact with that government component. I say that largely as a lead-in to the next thing I'm going to say, which is I don't teach anyone else, so I never get to talk to one else. So I just have to say this. The IRS has an honors program, and you apply to it the summer before your second year. In other words, it happens in the fall recruitment session, which is actually the summer. So before any human being has taken a tax class almost anywhere in the country, there are some schools that have 1L electives that are taxed, but most of them don't. That's when the IRS interviews people. And I believe it's still true that they have a criteria that they will only interview the top 20% of the class. So you have to be in the top 20% of your class. If you are in the top 20% of your class, and you somehow have figured out that tax is interesting to you, which there's sort of almost no way that you could have done that unless you brought it from the rest of your life.
Or you could take it on faith.
Right. Then that's a really great opportunity. I totally encourage you to look into it or to mention it to your friends who might be interested. And I'll say this about it. I became a tax lawyer in law school. I had literally, it never occurred to me before I started law school that would be interesting to me, and through a bunch of weird stuff, I ended up doing that, and I found it to be an extremely, a great practice area, especially as compared to some of the practice areas of my friends, so not to complain about others. But, so anyway, so that's my individual. The general concept is just to think about the government side of it, because especially that's the way externships play in. That's the way, and the other part of it is to not to think of that exclusively. In other words, to think of that as part of a career that includes both government and private practice. So then the other thing I want to say is very general, and that's just that if you think to yourself that all of this categorization and kind of the way that there are very specific things and then there are more general things, and it's not always entirely clear how they fit together, but it seems like people have strong opinions about how they fit together, that is not because of ignorance that seems totally weird and like shifting sands. That is reality. In other words, the way in which there are big picture things and then more specific things, and like, what does a lawyer actually do? Well, what a lawyer actually ends up doing usually is something very, very specific, but there's no way that you can start there. So lawyers end up kind of finding themselves in something very, very specific. At the same time, when you're in law school, you're exploring something very broad, but at the same time, you're developing like a story about yourself that is important to you as well as to anyone else. And developing that story has to have some specificity to it. So, when I was in your position, the only thing I knew was I needed to figure out whether I wanted to be a litigator or a non-litigator. And I needed to do something to figure out which I wanted to do. And so in my second year, I did a bunch of things and determined that I didn't want to be a litigator. That was the extent of my conscious development towards a sense of myself. I kind of went to law school knowing I was with my wife already, and I knew that she was going to have a job somewhere in the country, and I wanted a job that I could get anywhere in the country. And I thought, oh, there are lawyers all over the country. That's what I'll do. And that turned out to be totally wrong, just as a factual matter, that it's not, there are lawyers all over the country, but they do extremely different things. You can't just walk out of law school and do whatever they're doing anywhere in the country. That the things that people do in New York are actually really different from the things that people do in Dubuque. I didn't know that. I thought I was just like, oh, lawyer. But at this stage, I was like, do I want to be a litigator or a transactional lawyer? And it turns out in my career that that actually was an artificial distinction. So I spent a bunch of time being a tax litigator, which wasn't really anything like what I thought being a litigator was going to be. Like, I never went to court, for example, almost never went to court. And then I spent a bunch of time being doing this very, very narrow transactional practice that was also nothing like what I expected. So the moral of that story is not that I should have understood better what the future held at the early time. It's that what you're doing is you're exploring and simultaneously trying to build a narrative. And just like when you want to, for the same reasons that you want to tell stories about yourself that are open and positive and have lots of possibilities in them, you want to do that in this as well. In other words, I think my strategy of determining that I didn't want to be a litigator as the first thing I knew about myself was actually misguided, not just because my practice ended up involving both, but because the goal is to find things that you like, think about why you like them and what else they're connected to, and then be able to tell an evolving story about how you're developing yourself as someone who can competently practice law in a variety of areas that are associated with these things. And that's always going to involve kind of shifting different axes, and you know, it's not like you're going to pick one of those things and say, I want to be an antitrust litigator and just like march toward it. I mean, you might do that, but that's unlikely in my experience of the way things happen. That's like general life advice. But also, I want to give us time before we walk out of the room for people to ask questions of the faculty.
Right.
Did I say my name is Ben Lapp and I teach tax? So let me say one more thing, which is that there are people who will take the tax class and they'll think, oh my God, I really like tax. For that to work in law school, you have to have taken the tax class. For you to then say, and I want to be a tax lawyer, you have to have taken the tax class pretty soon. In other words, sometime in your second year would help a lot, because all of the upper level tax classes depend on you having taken the introductory tax class. And so I often talk to students who, you know, it's the second semester of their 3L year, and they think like, oh, that was great. I wish I had time to take corporate tax or partnership tax or something like that. So I encourage you to do that. But I mean, I'm sure that's a little bit self-serving, but that's probably true of other areas as well. So. And also, even if you know you're never going to think about yourself that you're going to want to be a tax lawyer, at least the introductory tax is a really important class for sort of a whole variety of things, not even just business law classes, but family law and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Really fundamental class.
It's a social policy class. That's really the way I've taught in this school.
Yes. Though I usually don't oversell that part, because I want to say, and also you learn law. So
and also,
just to satisfy.
And you do learn law.
You absolutely do. But, yeah.
Questions?
Is there an easy way to, like, a list of upper-level courses that have a writing component?
That have a writing component? Is that the question?
Oh, that's right.
Oh, interesting. Good question. Because the way that Pathways does it, it just says there's a category that's kind of experiential rather than writing, right? Yeah.
That would be helpful, wouldn't it?
But, like, the course descriptions will include if it satisfies the writing requirement.
I believe, yeah, I think you'd look at seminars, because
seminars.
That's where it's done, and if they don't, the course descriptions don't explicitly say this satisfies, don't contact the professor.
Yeah.
My take on most is,
go ahead. Most classes in which a paper is written that could satisfy the upper level writing requirement will say that.
So they should.
Yeah, they do. So they should say that.
Look for seminars and look under experiential. I don't think there's one place, but I think those things will get okay there.
Is it pretty much assumed that when you're going through Pathways that anything under foundational is a prerequisite for the following courses?
No. This school, for better or worse, has a culture against prerequisites. So there are very few of them. And there are some. The main ones are business associations, which is a prerequisite for securities regulation, and a couple other courses, including a very popular capstone course that's about business planning. So BA is one. Another one is basic tax, which is pretty much a prerequisite for all the other tax classes. And another one is evidence, which is a prerequisite for a lot of the trial advocacy sorts of things. With the exception of those, there are few prerequisites, whereas there are a fair number of foundational courses. And the foundational courses, my two cents is, yes, they're foundational, but don't feel like you have to take every single one of them. When the faculty was putting those things together, realized there's a certain amount of, well, my course is foundational too. We'll put that there too. So that's my two cents. I'm going to ask some questions.
Mr. Rabel. So I have two questions. The first is, speaking to you, speaking to Professor Baker, tax is a foundation course, maybe not required, but we need to take it. Does it matter if we take personal income tax, federal personal income tax first, or federal income tax for corporations?
When we say basic tax, we mean federal personal income tax.
Okay.
And actually, my view is that federal personal income tax is the foundational tax class for all tax classes, and that it is not necessarily the case that corporate has to be the next class. In other words, I think corporate tax is a really important class to take, but I think that if you are, depending on what industry you might find yourself in or what types of clients you might be advising, partnership tax might actually be as important or more important a class. And so I think of it as tax and then a whole lot of upper level classes, each of which you can take, including corporate. The nice thing about corporate is we offer it every semester except for last fall. It's easy to get it in your schedule, and the other ones we only offer once.
The second question, in reading your piece on what we should take, you mentioned that we should always try to take one course that we like, that makes us happy.
How far from the path?
If we stray in that, like if we're down the business path, can we go ahead and take a few con law courses just because it interests us?
I believe the answer to that is yes. I think what I put in there is take a course that in your heart of hearts you really want to take, regardless of everything else, right? And I believe that. I think, I feel I owe my students a duty of honesty. And I think there may be some courses that in some quarters might cause a raised eyebrow. But I would just deal with that. Maybe in the sort of rebellious attitude of, if it's going to bother them that I took law and poverty, well, then I don't want to work for them anyway. Because that's who you are, right? You decided you really wanted to take that course. Well, you take it, and I think that's the way to get yourself to where you want to go. I really do believe that.
Is VA offered spring and fall?
Yes. Occasionally, even in the summer. Not this summer.
Okay.
But you're right to ask that. If you're interested in business law, I tend to think you want to take BA as soon as possible. I agree with Professor Lev. First of all, you have to take BA. It's pretty much a required course. And that is also true of tax. I actually think it is just as true of tax. It is not quite as widely known, but anybody who knows anything knows it. And you have to take tax. Okay, and that is just the fact. It turns out to be good news that tax is a really fun and interesting course, because it turns out to be a course in social policy. People tend to think, okay, well, you know, I'm going to take tax because they said I had to, but I am not going to like it. And then they put it off. And it turns out you do like it, because it's not what you thought it was going to be. It's a law course. It's not an accounting course. And for better or worse, we do a lot of our social policy and social planning through the tax code.
For worse.
Okay, so for worse, we do. And you deal with that, and then you see how it works. It's like, wow, I found the code, right? And it's like the secret code, because everybody's afraid of it. So you have to do that, and as Professor Luck was saying, it's good to take that sooner rather than later because a lot of people fall in love with it. The other area that people fall in love with and they don't realize that they will, and they often are taking it too late, is bankruptcy. But I'm not going to tell you that's a course you have to take. Tax you have to take, VA you have to take.
Any other questions?
Yeah, I'm going to ask one because I want to answer it in public. Professor Snyder, this is aimed at you.
Okay.
If I want to do a clinic and I'm interested in business law, which are the right ones for me? And see, I want to do this because this way Professor Bennett can correct me if I'm wrong. What I would say is, community and economic development law clinic is the only transactional clinic. So if you're interested in a transactional practice, are the clients like the ones you're going to be dealing with in a big business law practice? No. But are you going to be doing transactional skills work? Yes. So transactional, do that clinic. Tax clinic. Well, if you're interested in tax, do the tax clinic. And tax pervades everything. Especially in the business world. Actually, it pervades everything, but especially in the business world in a really big way. And again, are the clients the same? No. And it's controversy litigation, it's controversies rather than planning, but still, it's a good way to get experience with the IRS and how it all works and that sort of stuff. And Professor Leck can correct me if I'm missing the boat there. And then, the general clinic, which is something that people often don't think about, you can do work in things like bankruptcy, contracts, and stuff like that. And so that's something you can think about too. And one of the things you also need to think about when you're thinking about clinic is the time commitment and whether you have to do two semesters or one semester. A lot of these have one semester options, which means you haven't spent a lot of your chits. Okay, so y'all want to correct her?
Right, it's the tax clinic and the, we now call the civil advocacy clinic.
That's the two, but that's the whole general clinic.
Yeah, and those are both one semester clinics.
And then on the externship front, let me just say, being in Washington is awesome on that front because there's this rule that you have to work for the government or a nonprofit. And most business law types are like, you just killed my universe. But not in Washington. Okay, Washington, you want to go to work for the CFTC, regulates derivatives, SEC, securities, CFP, I mean, it goes on and on and on, the Fed, FDIC, et cetera, and we have all these placements there, right? Those are all government, that's kosher, right? And total business. The other thing is, lobbying organizations are set up as nonprofits. So, for instance, one of my old dean's fellows got an externship and then a real job at the Financial Services Roundtable. That is a nonprofit that represents the masters of the universe, right? The biggest banks in the world, right? So you decide you want the client side of things? All right, we got that. You can work for the National Association of Manufacturers, right? This is the people with the smokestacks.
You can work in the NFL.
That would be cool. All right, now is where we leave, and then the students are going to tell you how it really is.
By the way, I want us to leave, so you're free to talk. But if there's things that we should know, please tell us also.
Write a note and slip it under our door. Anyway,
thank you very much.
Alright, now the party starts. Alright, guys. Very briefly, this is Mark Ways, Brandon Kennard, and Brittany Davidson. These are all very accomplished law students at law school, so they have good advice to give you. And I'll just start it off because we all want to get out of here as practically as possible. So this is going to be like really practical, really honest, really don't do this, do this. And it might not vibe with maybe like WCL policy with what we may tell you with who not to take or who to take, but it's the truth and you deserve the truth. So I guess one question I'll ask all of you to answer is what's something you did and what's one bullet you definitely dodged that you're really happy that happened? Brittany. It's like, what's one course you took? What's one extracurricular thing you did? Or what's something you're really glad you didn't do that has put you in a pretty good spot now?
So I've taken majority of like general classes. So like evidence, I want to be a litigator, which I figured out last summer. So last summer I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office for D.C. in the National Security Division. And from there, I decided I want to be a litigator. So I've taken evidence and I've taken criminal classes because that's more of my focus, which is, you know, business. But I've also taken BA and other, and next year I'm taking securities and federal personal income tax just because it's a big basis for the bar exam, and I don't want to see that as the first time that I'm seeing anything business related or family law, things like that. I don't think I really dodged the bullet in law school, honestly. I think my best path in law school for me, just because I don't know, at the beginning I thought I wanted to do telecommunications law, and then I'm at the FCC now, and that's nothing that I'm interested in. So for me, I've taken more general classes that apply to the bar exam and are just good foundational classes for being a lawyer. But I've done a lot of externships, so I'm at the FCC, I was at the U.S. Attorney's Office, and I'm also part of a couple bar associations, which I think are really good for 1Ls or just anyone to join. You're going to meet a lot of attorneys, and they really helped me out with OCI last summer. And also you get to see like actual work. So I'm part of the FCPA, and here's the second one that I am, that's criminal oriented. So I met with a lot of attorneys there, and you kind of get to see what their work is doing. So I highly recommend joining any type of bar association within DC. There's so many. I know there's a business one. So I recommend joining that and getting in touch with attorneys, because they have a lot of good practical advice too.
Yeah, bar associations are huge. Yeah, we're getting out there. Networking is really huge.
Okay, great. So something that we're glad that we did.
Something you're really glad you didn't do.
And something we're glad we did. Okay. Hi guys, Brandon Kennard. I'm at 3L. And was this event marketed as a business law event?
It's marketed as a curricular advice to shape your resume for business law jobs.
Oh, okay, perfect. So I'm a big business law guy. I've known that I wanted to do business law from the time I came into law school. I just didn't know exactly what business law was or what the scope of it was. It's a lot bigger and more varied than you can actually think. But one thing, classes are very important. The classes that you take are very important, but an equally as important aspect of law school, especially after your 1L year, is the extracurriculars you get involved in. Come OCI next semester, when you're beginning your 2L year, almost every job that's posted will say journal or mock trial, moot court preferred. If you don't take part in one of these things, you're going to be putting yourself behind a lot of people. So I highly recommend, I know Right On just ended. If you didn't do Right On, trying to grade on, journals are a great place not only to meet people, they look great on a resume, and they introduce you to an alumni network of practitioners in the area and across the country. If journal's not for you and you want to be a litigator, definitely look into moot court, mock trial. Those are extremely important to kind of... It's when you get into interviews for actual jobs, people aren't going to ask you, tell me what you did in your securities regulation class, or what was your favorite aspect of BA. They're going to want to know what you learned while you were engaged in writing or managing on a journal or arguing a case in moot court, mock trial, externships as well. They're going to want to know what you did during your externship and what experience you have in kind of real practice. I think Professor Lapp hit it really nicely on the head when he said law school is all about building a narrative. That's kind of what I've viewed as what's worked for me, at least, is making your resume and your time in law school into a story that you can tell and sell to employers. So coordinating your classes, your extracurriculars, and your externships all towards telling one story, reaching towards a certain goal. And as soon as you can identify that goal, where you want to practice, what type of law, start angling your classes, your externships, and your extracurriculars towards being competitive for that market. And if you guys have any questions about that, I'm happy to answer them, but I won't ramble on.
No, that was good. That was a perfect segue. I'll say that I'm going to kind of piggyback off of what he said. I think it's better to get experience, like wherever you can, get experience over taking a doctoral class, because it's way more powerful in an interview to say I worked on this case than to talk about this case that you loved and you read, you know, your homework for class. So if you can do externships, great. I'm really happy that I've done at least one externship while here in D.C. Something just to like really remember is that I personally think D.C. is the best city in the country to be a law student in, just because, as Professor Snyder said, there's so many different government agencies you can extern for. Now, I know it's very competitive getting summer internships. So something to keep in the back of your mind, which hopefully gives all you peace, is that the average law student has two internships by the time they graduate, maybe three, because you do an internship between 1L year and 2L year, and then you do another one between 2L year and 3L year. Now, it's not like someone, you know, think of this as you're building a portfolio so that by the time you graduate, if you don't already have a job, which I hope you do, but if you don't already have a job, you know, you're presenting this narrative, as we've talked about, that is this beautiful thing that makes people want to hire you. So as long as you have two experiences, you know, if three, great. But, you know, as long as you can get two experiences under your belt, that's fine. It's not like you get points knocked off because it was a fall externship versus a summer internship. Like, it's just about building skills. And hopefully that builds, you know, peace within you, because I've talked to a couple of 1Ls and, you know, it's coming down to the wire. They still don't have their summer internship. I'm like, hey, you know, it's not the end of the world if you take classes this semester. And then you try to get an externship in the fall where, you know, you're only going up against this, you know, D.C., Maryland, Virginia area law schools for the externship, as opposed to the whole country for an internship during the summer. Because everybody wants to, you know, well, not everybody, but many people want to work in D.C., New York, or L.A., San Francisco. So that's just something to keep in the back of your mind. I'm just really glad that, you know, I've done experiences where I could get stuff on my resume. I did the general practice clinic. And I've done an externship. So these are things that I guess we can talk about more, but definitely do externships if you can.
Yeah, that's huge. Getting into the classroom is really big. So I guess, talk about in the classroom, something that you took that was just something that just had no bearing on what you're doing now. It wasn't very helpful. It was boring. You didn't get much from the professor. It was a waste of your time. Class, that just like one of those.
Even if you don't get something from a class, in every single class you're issue spotting and you're learning how to analyze a legal problem. So I mean, even if it's not the most interesting thing, I think just going through the steps, especially like 1L year, nothing, I don't want to say nothing, but whatever internship you go into over summer, you're probably not going to have that much experience in whatever it is. So I think even keeping in mind the techniques that you've learned in your class, like on final exams, you know, you learn to like issue spot, especially legal writing, learning how to write memos, briefs, all of that kind of stuff.
Is there anything you took that you necessarily would recommend? Like, you could have had another option. You wish you would have taken care of this elsewhere.
Yes. Well, this doesn't really apply to the TIFLA, but I took cyber law. I wouldn't recommend that.
Yeah. So I guess I was pretty fortunate in that I kind of found my niche area of the law during my first internship after 1L year. I really fell in love with the legal regime of securities regulation. But before that, I guess you do register for classes before the summer begins. You guys, it's coming up for you guys pretty soon. So you're going to have to take classes before you have any on-the-ground experience working at an internship or anything like that. So I echo all the professors, if you're interested in business law at all, you need to take business associations, because if you can't stand that class, business law's not. I was interested for, I cycled through a few things as a 1L. I came in here and thought maybe intellectual property would be cool. I took a little intro to intellectual property, realized that wasn't really my thing. When registering as a second semester 1L, I thought maybe international trade law. That would be kind of neat, right? Because I came in thinking that international business law would be kind of where it's at. That's what I'd like to do. I thought maybe trade would kind of tie into that. It doesn't. It's extremely different. It's all public law in front of the WTO, which is very soft, UN-y kind of... not very, very enforceable, per se. So when I took that, I realized that any public international law is not for me. So identify these types of classes and take them to see if it's for you, and don't make too many assumptions about areas of interest before you kind of get a little taste first.
Yeah, it's hard for me to identify a class that I regret taking. Because then again, I guess I just regret any class that I know I don't want to practice law in. And there's a couple of those, because I started out wanting to do IP, and then I wanted to do M&A, and now I want to do tax. So, you know, I'll just say as a small side note that sometimes you won't know what you want to end up doing after law school until you either take the class or until you do an internship in that area. So, you know, for a while, I thought I wanted to definitely do IP. You know, I took a couple of business law classes, and I realized, okay, I want to be this, like, guy closing deals and stuff. And then I realized that there's a lot of tax implications whenever there's a deal that needs to be closed. When there's a $100 million deal, there's tens of millions of dollars that can be saved through taxes. And I was like, oh, okay, I want to try to do tax. And you don't know that when you're a 1L. I mean, I didn't know that when I was 1L. So it's okay if you don't know what you definitely want to do right now. But I'll just say, you know, there's going to be classes you don't enjoy, and that's all right. Just remember, like, in the grand scheme of things, you know, it's okay to an extent, experiment. I took cyber law too, you know. So, you know, this is kind of your chance to just get exposure to things that you wouldn't otherwise. So, you know, that's not really answering your question, because I don't have a class that I regret. I mean, I know I hated property, but you can't. Yeah, you gotta take it. So, you know, just do your best, and you know, to as much as you can, just try to build a narrative while you're here.
Do you guys have any questions for them? The courses should we be taking in our fall semester 2 of?
I think it comes, if you want to graduate with enough credits, I think it averages out to about 15 credits per semester. But you can take 13 the first semester, 16 the next semester, so long as you have 86 by the end of your time here, you're set.
I think I took 14.
Yeah. Also, LARU, if you guys burn on to grade on to, you get 2 credits for that as a junior staff member. And also, if you want to extern, you get, I think 3 credits is in total between the externship seminar and the externship itself, you get around 5 credits. So you can take that into account when you're calculating how many you need per semester.
Are you guys on journal?
Yeah.
Okay. So I didn't do journal. And I mean, that's awesome that you did do journal. But some people don't make journal. And I mean, it's okay. And if there is anybody, you know, who didn't make journal, you know, you don't got to raise your hand. It's okay. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that you can do to build your resume. So I'll just give you a couple of things, because, you know, when I didn't do journal, I realized, okay, crap, I don't have journal. I got to, like, figure out some things to do, and hopefully this is helpful. If you're definitely interested in business law, period, you know, you can maybe be a research assistant for a professor. Like, let's say you really want to do contracts. You know, I mean, a lot of corporate people don't really care that much about clerkships. So if you can say, okay, I was a research assistant or a dean's fellow or a contract professor, maybe you could tell employers, like, hey, I really know my contracts. Or the same with, you know, being a research assistant for, like, securities regulation. Another thing that you can do is, you know, really be strategic with how you use your upper-level writing requirement. When I did my upper-level writing requirement, I did it on the Dodd-Frank Act. Why? Because I had no clue what it was. I was curious about what it was. I knew I was interested in financial regulation and Wall Street, but I used the upper-level writing requirement as an opportunity to educate myself on just financial crisis, what is the Dodd-Frank Act, how does it affect these different financial institutions, and, you know, just always keep in the back of your mind, everything you do, like, try to be strategic, like, and not just to be strategic, like, strategic to get a job, like, that's what this is all about. So, you take your paper, you start interviewing attorneys, even if you don't use their quote, that's automatic FaceTime, automatic networking opportunity, and you build contacts, because right now you really want to start building your professional network. And these are people who can end up referring you to other attorneys, potential employers, or even help you get interviews, which has happened to me. So these are things just to keep in mind. Everything you're doing, there's always an opportunity to swing getting credits into, you know, hitting two birds with one stone, and not only getting credits, but also networking. So just always keep that in mind.
I would echo that, yeah. It's always intelligent to have a contingency plan just in case something doesn't quite go according to plan. Speaking just from my experience, say with WCL's on-campus interview process at the beginning of my 2L year, you know, I was going in gung-ho, applying to big law firms, getting really excited, and it completely fell through.
It fell through for me too.
Yeah, so, like, you know, I thought to myself, okay, I do want to end up in a large law firm. What can I do now that OCI has fallen through to make myself competitive against people that will be having summer associate positions? And being in D.C. really allowed me to do that. I went and externed with the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission. And when I went back to these law firms, 3L year, bringing that experience with me allowed me to secure a position. So really roll with the punches and get ready to come up with strategies to adjust to that. And I think journal example is great. There are many other opportunities, briefs, clinics, that you can really gauge your interest and paint that picture on your resume.
Any other questions? Great. Well, I would just piggyback on a lot of things they said. I would really emphasize on getting out there and meeting employers. It really is as simple as finding somebody at a law firm that you might have met informally through a networking event here and hitting them up for coffee or lunch. It's going to be a free coffee. It's going to be a free lunch. And you just sit down, and it's something as simple like this. I just want to know if I can get your advice on this summer, or I can get your advice on how I can make my resume really explode, or this is my writing sample, I'm not really confident about it, I want to see if you can give me some eyes or something like that. You would really be surprised at how easy it is to get coffee and lunch with really important people. They care and they want to help out. You know, maybe like they passed up a bunch of situations. This is what I think about it. They passed up probably in like the years before, and they were really busy, situations where they could pay it forward. So now they're a little older, a little more successful, so they feel like a little obligated to do that. But really, it's really simple to do that. It shows fit, you know, it shows that you care, it shows that you're interested, and it gives you an opportunity to like get engaged with professionals, to know how to speak with someone. That, you know, it opens doors for externships, it opens doors for jobs. I'm very sure that networking played a huge role in anything that you guys have right now. Get out there, make yourselves really, really, really present to these people in this city, because it's important. Because if you stay here and you just work and you think that you're just gonna do a few externships and get good grades, you're not gonna be successful in trying to get a job. You're just not. You gotta hustle. You gotta be up on it. You gotta be awake, and you gotta talk to people. So that's what I would say is my piece of advice.
Can I just piggyback off that? And I think that sometimes people don't understand, like, when you do meet with someone for coffee, it makes so much of a difference if you prepare for that coffee. I mean, there's a lot of things that I sometimes take for granted that some people know, and I didn't know it. Somebody told me it. But like, for example, sending the thank you email after, sending the thank you card after. You know, what do you put on the thank you card? Just a small message like, dear Mr. So-and-so, it's a pleasure getting caught with you. Look forward to keeping in touch. Best, whatever your name is. You know, like, these are things that just such an investment. I mean, I have attorneys tell me all the time when I send them a thank you card, like, wow, you're the first law student that's ever done that. You know, so these are just things to definitely keep in mind. And just please, you know, I hope all this isn't intimidating or anything like that. Like, just always remember, I was talking to Professor Bennett about this. You know, law school does not reflect what practicing law is like. So if one else sucks, it's okay. You know, like, it's supposed to suck. It's kind of like a rite of passage. Like, you just got to go through it. It's like a hazing process to then actually have fun practicing law. So, you know, even if you take a class and you don't think it's that interesting, that might be the professor's fault. You might have chose a textbook that sucks, you know. I'm a JD MBA student. I've been here for 4 years, so I've gone through a lot of different classes where, you know, I'm speaking from experience here. Like, there's a huge difference from, you know, working and, like, actually doing the work in a law firm or at a government entity versus, like, taking a class and having some professor, you know, whose head is in the clouds, you know, just really academic, just put you to sleep, you know? So don't worry. Like, it gets better. There's a light at the end of the tunnel. So just keep that in mind. It's okay.
Great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.